Okay, this is May 9, 2010, New Vrindavan, Festival of Inspiration. Entering into Krishna's pastimes, looking at swallowing the forest fire and the killing of Shalva. So we have two goals for this seminar. One is to absorb ourselves more in Krishna's pastimes as we go through the day and seeing things in our lives reminding us of Krishna's pastimes. That everything in this world acting as an udipan or as an impetus to remember Krishna. And we also have another goal for this seminar, and that is to see how our own lives are part of Krishna's story. To see our own lives as a wonderful adventure, as part of Mahaprabhu's Leela. Now, if you think that's a pretty amazing or outrageous claim, I thought I would show you this nice quote from Jivajarma by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Goes over three slides, but I included the whole thing. That the leelas of Sri Krishna are unlimited and variegated, hence the material world also is one of his unique activities. When the supreme autocrat willfully engages in a kaleidoscope of pastimes, why should it be unusual for him to enact this particular pastime? In other words, the pastime of this world. Oh, I don't mind. If the principle of variegated leelas is kept intact, not a single... Can you move that more? No. Not very useful. Not a single type of leela can be rejected. So the material world is also Krishna's leela. And is there... Was that...
Whoa! Can you move it a little more? Do some magic on the wire? All right, well, hopefully that'll be enough.
So now here Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying that in any of Krishna's leelas, the participants may apparently have to accept many kinds of hardships and pain from an external point of view. And he's saying here that if you fully surrender yourself to the sweet will of the Supreme Lord, it's only natural that there's going to be adversities. And we'll talk about why in a second. If finally this material adversity turns into an auspicious state that is far from miserable, then why ultimately should one call it adversity? So the core here is that Krishna likes adventures. He's not boring. If you want boring, you have to go to the Brahman. Basically, you want misery, you stay in material consciousness. You want boring, you merge into the Brahman. You just want knowledge. You connect with the super soul. And you want excitement, you go with Krishna. Well, excitement means, adventure means, there's conflict. There's difficulties, there's adversities, there's things to solve. I remember in college when I was writing a drama, it was just like I got up, I brushed my hair, I brushed my teeth, and the professor said, that's not a story, it's boring. You have to have some kind of conflict. So all of Krishna's adventures have conflict. And anyone who participates in them, there's also some adversity. But if they see that as part of Krishna's adventure, they don't experience it as adversity. Now this is the key. The tribulations of the jiva while trying to satisfy in the Lord in his pastimes are by all accounts pleasurable. So if we see the material world as Krishna's leela, which it is, and if we're thinking, I'm helping to satisfy the Lord, then all of our so-called tribulations and difficulties will become pleasurable. He says, yet the conditioned soul, by misuse of his free will, denies himself the exaltation one experiences whilst directly assisting Sri Krishna in his transcendental pastimes. Indeed, he embraces Maya, who gives him only acute harassment. If anyone is to blame for this dilemma, it is the jiva and definitely not Krishna. So this means that I'm choosing whether to see my activities in this world as illusion or as part of Krishna's adventure. I'm making that choice. Very nice quote in Krishna book. Prabhupada says that the conditioned soul sees the world as very adversarial and the devotee sees it as simply happiness everywhere. So we can choose to say, I'm going to see my life as part of Krishna's adventure. I've surrendered myself to Krishna. He's directing my life. This whole world is his leela, and I'm part of his story. And we're going to look at two stories. The first one is the swallowing of the forest fire. And this starts out in Bandiravan. Anybody here ever been to Bandiravan? So that's... has a wave open. That's where Radha and Krishna got married, under the direction of Lord Brahma. Much too cumbersome. You always remember. And that's also in the context of this story, where all the cowherd boys in Krishna and Balaram ended up after the killing of Prahlambasura. So here you see Balaram is on the shoulders of Prahlambasura. Prahlambasura. And actually this painting isn't entirely accurate because Prahlambasura took Balaram to this tree. So he didn't start at this tree, ended at this tree. This is where Prahlambasura died. And then all the cowherd boys and Krishna and all the cows and the goats and the buffalo all follow Balaram to this big banyan tree. This banyan tree is on the other side of the Jamuna from the main area of Vrindavan. So they were on the other side of the Jamuna by the banyan tree. And they were celebrating Krishna killing Prahlambasura, and they were having a grand time. Now we're going to say, before we go into this story, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur also explains in his Shikshamrita that each of the demons Krishna kills represents some anartha. So the swallowing of this particular forest fire we're going to hear about represents the obstacles that atheists create against Dharma and the preachers of Dharma. So we talked about this a little bit yesterday in a different context, how we're trying to be devotees in the world, and the world is kind of pushing against us. And the atmosphere we're in is pushing against us. So the swallowing of the forest fire mitigates this obstacle to our spiritual life. Wouldn't that be nice? Not to have the obstacle of dealing with Kali. Okay, so this pastime, again, it takes place on the same day as the killing of Prahlambasura, which is right at the end of summer. And here you see that the cows and the goats and the buffalo are starting to wander off. You see that? They're kind of walking away. And the cowherd boys are playing, and they're not noticing. They're just having a great time, and they're not paying any attention. Now, the animals went off looking for fresh grass. So we sometimes do that. Sometimes, although we're in Krishna's company, and we're in the company of devotees, we think, maybe I can get some enjoyable fresh grass over there. Let me wander away from Krishna. So that's what they did. Now, They went a very, very long way looking for fresh grass. And this is what happens to us in this world. When we go to look for something enjoyable, we end up going further. Oh, maybe it's a little over there. Then we go a little further. Oh, maybe it's a little over there. Then we go a little further. Oh, maybe it's a little bit over there. And they went a total of 15 kilometers, which is about 7 miles. That's a very long way. Even though they were under Krishna's protection, they were whimsically looking for their own sense gratification. Oh, I should say that my explanation of this Leela and the following Leela are taken from Krishna book, BBT 10th Canto, the commentaries of Sridhar Swami, Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami, and they're also taken from any other books such as Brihad Bhagavatamrita or Garga Samhita or Garuda Purana that also describes these pastimes. And sometimes from places in other Prabhupada's books, such as Nectar Devotion. So just in case you want, wherever that comes. So anyway, this is what happens when we look for sense gratification. We go someplace, no, this isn't what I wanted. Oh, that's over there. No, this isn't what I wanted. Oh, now it's over there. And this way they kept going further and farther. Well, they went really, really far, and they got stuck in some sugar cane, where the leaves are very sharp, and they couldn't get out. They tried to move, they would get cut by the leaves, and they were in great distress, and they were crying. There was also, at this time, a forest fire in a distance, and they were feeling the heat from the fire, and they felt very thirsty. They were being cut by the canes, and and they couldn't get out, and they were crying. So then the boys start noticing that their animals are gone. And that's rather distressing for them, because the animals are their livelihood. It's their responsibility. That's not going to work either. It's their service that they're supposed to take care of. You know, we have our service to Krishna that we're supposed to do, and the boys were so absorbed in playing. So sometimes that happens too. You know, we get so absorbed in the ecstasy of Krishna consciousness, we forget about our service. Just stay in the kirtan all night. Oh, wait a minute, I'm supposed to do something. So Sridhar Swami says the boys were distressed, but Krishna and Balaram were distressed. And Sanatana Jiva Goswami says that Krishna and Balaram arranged this distress of the boys because they wanted to enjoy a new lila. Now, the boys were not exactly just crying because they thought, oh, we're going to be in trouble for not doing our duty. They thought, oh, the poor cows. What have happened to them? Maybe they're in some difficulty. So whenever we have responsibility for other devotees, we should always be thinking like this. How can I take proper care of the devotees that are under my responsibility? Now, they couldn't find them anywhere. By the way, all the pictures in this are from one of our children's books. If any of you have been at our table and seen our books, help us this room. These are all from one of our books. So they said, where are we going to find them? And Krishna and Balaram say, we'll find them. We'll help you find them. So then they all go out and look. And they're looking everywhere for the cows and the goats and the buffalo. So often these sort of things happen to us also in our own lives. Right? We have some responsibility to do for Krishna. We have something we're supposed to take care of. And somehow or other, things don't always go right. Isn't it? Now it looks like you have a catastrophe. You're supposed to be taking care of the animals. And they've wandered off. See, sometimes we may think, well, if I'm a devotee of Krishna and my life is surrendered to Krishna, everything's supposed to go perfectly. You know, why doesn't my life just go perfectly? Why isn't it just a clean, paved road? Like Krishna's supposed to go in front of me paving the road. But we see it's not like that in Leela. It's not like that in Leela. The boys are feeling distressed. Where's our animals? How are we going to take care of our responsibility? How are we going to take care of our livelihood? And they're looking for a long time. Remember, the cows walked off. How far did they walk off?
7 miles.
About 7 miles. It's a long way. You know? And finally, they notice some footprints of the animals. You can see some of the footprints there. And they also notice the path where the animals had eaten the grass, which is unusual because generally in Vrindavan, when the animals eat the grass, it immediately springs back up again. But in this case, it stayed as a path of eaten grass. Meanwhile, as the boys were going for a long way, they were becoming very tired and very thirsty. Now, again, if we keep in mind that Krishna likes adventures, you know, part of an adventure is you might get tired and thirsty. And going back again to Bhaktivinoda Thakura's quote, they're not seeing this tired and thirsty as a material misery. They're seeing it as part of the adventure. If there's no problem that the hero solves, where's the story? How do you get to be a hero? If there's no difficulty. So the cowherd boys are accepting this difficulty as a loving, pleasurable offering to Krishna. Okay, now you see one boy has found the animals. Here they are. He heard them calling. I found them. They're stuck in the sharp canes. Over here, over here. The poor animals were really thirsty by that time. Then Krishna starts calling the cows with a voice like a thundering cloud and full of love. And Sanatana Goswami says his calling of the cows is Sankirtan. Just like we chant Krishna's names, Yasomari Nandana, Rajajana. So Krishna's chanting the names of his cows. And you know Krishna has japa beads. You know that Krishna has japa beads? It's a Krishna book. Krishna has japa beads. They're not made of tulsi wood, though. You know what they're made of? Good guess. Not wood.
Jewels.
They're made of jewels. And that's how he keeps track of his cows. I mean, we talk about how the beads are the 108 Upanishads and the 108 gopis. For Krishna, they're his cows, and they're his different groups of cows. He's got cows of different colors, and he's got some cows with mridanga-shaped heads. Just recently in Vrindavan, I finally saw a breed of cows with mridanga-shaped heads. And he calls the leader of each group of cows, and he checks on his beads that all of his cows are there. So he was calling all the cows, and they were not only cows, of course. You can also see the goats and the buffalo. And the animals responded with great joy. Right? And the boys were also very, very happy that they finally have found all of their animals. So this also happens to us, right? We have some service we're doing. There's some difficulty. And somehow or other, Krishna saves the situation. And everything looks good. And then, again, there's something. Now, you remember there was a fire in the distance. And there's that fire in the distance. So they're starting to walk back to Vandiravan. But there's that fire in the background. And they're not really noticing the fire. Has that ever happened with us? We're just absorbing something, and then there's some problem back there, and we're not even aware that it's in the background. But then suddenly, the fire surrounded them in all eight directions. And the wind was carrying the fire like the wind was the chariot driver of the fire. Carrying the fire like in a chariot. And there were flames shooting out like meteors. So that's what it means to be in Krishna's adventure. That sometimes you're going to be in the midst of a fire where there's flames shooting out like meteors. Where it looks like there's going to be a total devastation. Sanatana Goswami said the fire was a demon friend of Pralamba, who was angry that Pralamba was killed. And some other commentators say that the fire actually was just a devotee who wanted to associate with Krishna. We're going to read a little later about Krishna's point of view. The fire.
Is this the difference because there are two different appearances in the fire?
Side question, but very good question. Why do the different acharyas describe it differently? Several answers. One is that these pastimes are occurring eternally, but in slightly different variations, and people have described them in different variations. And the other is that each person has a different view of things. And for me, one of the strongest evidences, logical evidences, that God is a person, is that everyone describes the absolute truth a little differently. You know, if we were all going to describe this chair, we'd all describe it pretty much the same way. But if we're all going to describe you, we would describe you some, at least a little bit differently. Or just like I told the story in the temple room the other day of seeing Srila Prabhupada off at the airport in 1975 in New York. And Mahamaya was there, and Driti was there. But they each tell the story a little differently. They remember it a little differently. Well, we're different people. And the impressions we get are somewhat different. Now, in this world, we have some concept that there's an objective truth. That's what's supposed to be in the newspapers. And that these sort of differences are a fault due to our own bias and subjectivity. But these differences in how we view circumstances in this world are the perverted reflection of an ultimate difference in how people view Krishna's Leela. Everyone views Krishna's Leela a little differently. I mean, even if you're talking about objective truth, if one person is standing in that corner of the room and another person is standing in that corner of the room and we say describe the room, they're going to describe it from a different perspective, even though they're describing the same room. You think about when Mother Yasoda wakes up Krishna in the morning and he's dirty because he was out all night with the gopis. But she doesn't know he's out with the gopis. She thinks he's too young to be interested in girls. She doesn't have a clue. And she just looks at him and says, "Wow, the servants didn't do a very good job of bathing you last night." And then there are some gopis in the room, and they're giggling. And hoping Mother Yasoda doesn't figure out what's going on. So Mother Yasoda is a pure devotee. She's a very advanced level of Krishna Prema. She's a liberated soul. And yet her vision is different. Does that help?
A lot.
Okay, now the boys then in this fire, they're praying to Krishna, and it says they pray like someone afraid of death. But really the boys are not afraid of death. They're all in their spiritual bodies. They are afraid of being separated from Krishna. Mm-hmm. don't want to be separated from Krishna. And they don't want to be separated from Krishna out of love for Krishna. They're thinking, if we're separated from Krishna, Krishna will be unhappy. Krishna likes our association. He'll be sad if we're not here. And they're just dependent on Krishna. And they say, Krishna can save us and Balaram can help. First they ask Krishna and Balaram together, then they just ask Krishna, because they all have special affection for Krishna. And they remember that Gargamuni said that Krishna will save anyone who's dependent on him. So then Krishna tells the boys, okay, I will save you, but you have to close your eyes. So here again we have different points of view, that Krishna wanted them to close their eyes because he already got in trouble with Mother Yasoda for eating dirt. And he thought, if they go back and tell Mother Yasoda I'm eating fire, then I'll never hear the end of it. I'll just never let me go to the forest again. He was also afraid that if the boys saw him eating the fire, that they would worry that he would get hurt and that they would run through the fire to try to help him. Also, he was about to play a trick. And he didn't want them to see him doing the trick, like you did the tricks. And you kept saying, now I'm going to show you how it's done. But you never show us how it's done. If you show us how it's done, it's no fun. So Krishna likes to play tricks. He's about to play tricks. And he wanted everyone to close their eyes so they wouldn't see his tricks. Krishna loves to play tricks. I'm reading now the story of Sudama Brahmana, and I'm really struck with how Krishna likes to play tricks. And again, we can think of this in relationship to our own life. Sudama is so poor that he can't even wash his clothes properly. Like you see some poor people in a place like India where they're doing hand washing. They can't buy laundry soap. They can't heat up water. And their clothes turn gray, even though they're washing them. And their clothes are torn because they can't afford to replace them. So Sudama Brahmana came to see Krishna. He was skinny. His clothes were not properly clean. They were torn. You know, and here you're going to see Krishna, who's your old class friend, and he doesn't even say, here's a new set of clothes. Prabhupada said he didn't appear to receive even a farthing from Krishna. Nothing. Oh, how are you doing, Sudama? Let me wash your feet. Let me give you something to eat. Let's talk about old times. Let's talk about being in the forest with our guru. It's so wonderful to see you. He embraces him, which he only did to Rukmini and Balaram. Gives him nothing. Gives him nothing. And Sudama's walking back and he's thinking, Krishna is so kind that he gave me nothing. So he says, he knew that I'm immature and if I had anything, I'd misuse it. So out of his kindness, he gave me nothing. But Krishna didn't give him nothing. Surprise! So Krishna likes to be funny like that. He likes to be funny and loving. And he does that with us sometimes too, doesn't he? We need something and it looks like we're not getting it. We're not getting it. Where is he? Where is Krishna? And then there it is, in a way more amazing than we could have ever imagined. And you look back and you say, ah, that's where all those things happened. Ah. Right? But Krishna doesn't like to have us see him playing his magic. Right? He just likes to do the magic. Just like, why are you doing the magic? You're doing the magic so we'll all go, wow. You want us to be happy, right? And that's your payment. Like, why am I doing this? Because I want you to be happy. That's my payment. And I get a bed to sleep. So Krishna is doing his magic so that his devotees will be happy. And if he shows them the tricks, then, you know, where's the fun? So that's another reason he asked them to close his eyes. And the boys were thinking, how will it help if we close our eyes? How will that help Krishna? Now, it's interesting that Prabhupada says that Krishna tells the boys not to fear by speaking through his eyes. And there's many instances where Prabhupada talks about Krishna speaking through his eyes. And I was thinking about this a lot also. Many times when we ask Krishna for something, he doesn't give us a direct neon lights in the sky answer. Sometimes. Sometimes it's a coconut hit you on the head answer. Yeah. Sometimes. But other times it's not. And that's also fun. I mean, if you're talking to a friend and you just go, and they understand you, that's so much fun. like that connection with someone where they just get what you're saying. You're on the same wavelength. You can finish each other's sentences. Krishna loves doing that, does it all the time. Right? So Krishna's just looking at the boys, and then they understand. Oh, I don't have to be afraid. Krishna really likes that with us when we get his little whispers and hints. He doesn't really like hitting us on the head with coconuts, although he'll do it if necessary. But if we can see in our life, where's Krishna kind of whispering to me? So he tells them with his eyes, don't fear. And the boys were also thinking, Krishna's going to do some magic. Krishna's going to do some magic. He knows some kind of mantras. And he has some kind of special gems. And he doesn't want us to see him using them because then we'll get the secrets. He's got to keep it all hidden. So that's why he wants us to close his eyes. So that's what they're thinking.
Do some mischievous voice with the eyes open.
It's nothing like that. I don't know. When you see the pastime person, you can let us know if some of the mischievous boys kept their eyes. Somebody found out that Krishna swallowed the fire. Somebody found. Otherwise, we wouldn't know about it. So somebody was watching. I'm sure who was watching and saw the Krishna swallowed the fire. I don't know. That boy looks like he's peeking a little bit. So Krishna swallowed the fire. And again, this fire represents the difficulties we have with atheistic persons, with adharma. The difficulties we face by being in an atheistic society. And Krishna can swallow all of that fire. Now, why did Krishna swallow the fire? Well, he wanted to show Lord Brahma and the other demigods how much he loved his friends, that he's willing to swallow fire for them. He's willing to swallow fire for them. Krishna's willing to swallow fire for us, too. I mean, really, every parent is like that. Every parent, any of you who are parents, you know that you're willing to give your life for your kid. I met one father who said, before my son was born, I didn't even know who he was, and as soon as he was born, I was ready to give up my life for him. It's natural. So how much love does Krishna have? He's willing to swallow fire to save his friends. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur said that he was also thirsty for fire. So Krishna enjoys many tastes. One of my grandchildren said, Grandma, we especially like sweets. He really likes sweets. He loves to cook. And he especially likes to... They have a rotating schedule in their house for who cooks desserts. And even when it's not his day, he'll ask one of his brothers or sisters, you know, do you really want to cook dessert today? Because I'll do it. So he loves making sweets. He said, Grandma, does Krishna especially like sweets, just like we do? And I said, well, yeah. Vrindavan is called full of madhurya, which means sweet. And Krishna's conjugal ras, which is sometimes called Sringar ras, which literally means the conjugal ras, is also called Madhurya ras, which just means the sweet ras. Of course, there's that wonderful song, everything about Krishna is sweet. And that literally means sweet. One Gurukuli friend of mine once called me up and said, Madhurya, when it says the holy name is sweet, it really means it. It's not a metaphor. My mouth was full of sweetness. So Krishna doesn't always like sweet, but he likes all different tastes. That's why there's 12 rasas. In Ayurveda, there's sweet, salty, bitter, sour, pungent, and astringent. 6 tastes. So sometimes people like spicy foods. Any of you like spicy foods? You like spicy foods?
Little bit.
I have one devotee friend whose idea of dessert is chili pepper and salt. And you can see him put chili powder on his cupcakes and things like that. So some people really like spicy. Some places in the world I go, I don't even know how they can eat the food. And I feel like I'm eating fire. Have you ever eaten some prasadam and you're like, my God, I'm swallowing fire. But people really like that. So Krishna also likes it. He said, I want some fire. Now when Krishna wants to eat spicy food, he really wants to be fire. He's not fooling around. So that's the opinion of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that Krishna had a desire to be fire. And therefore his lila accommodates his desire. So you see, the devotees also see like that. There's something here that Krishna wants to do. And I'm part of Krishna's story to help him do that. And I'm willing to have, oh my God, the fire is good. I'm willing to do that to be part of Krishna's story. Now, it also says that the devotees couldn't bear to think of Krishna swallowing fire. So Yogamaya actually ate the fire, and then she turned it into a nice cooling beverage. Some other commentators say the fire was, the ones who say the fire was a demon, they say the fire was afraid of Krishna, and it turned itself into a cooling beverage that Krishna could then drink. And this picture is in the temple here, this painting of Krishna swallowing. So Prabhupada says in Krishna book that the boys had become almost unconscious from fear. Now it's interesting because Vaikuntha means without fear. And the basic principle of material life is fear. How are Krishna's personal associates in fear? But it's a safe kind of fear. It's a kind of fear you feel when you're on one of those rides in an amusement park. That's why you go on the ride. If you didn't get scared, then you'd be asked for your money back. Stupid ride. I didn't even feel scared. It was just for two-year-olds. Right? That's why people go to a lot of movies, a lot of the action movies, or right? They even have advertisements. I was just going through the subway, what they call the underground in London, and there's these advertisements, you know, watch this horror film and you won't sleep for the rest of your life. I'm thinking, why would anybody not want to sleep for the rest of their life? What a strange advertisement. But there's some pleasure from feeling fear when there's no real danger. When you're just sitting comfortably in your movie seat, okay? And it's really, really, really scary, or you're just wrapped, you know, tied into the amusement park ride with a big iron bar. So that is kind of this safe, exciting experience. And when things like this happen in our lives, we can choose to see it like that. As we said back in the beginning, Bhakti Vinod Thakur said, the whole material world is Krishna's lila. And we can choose to exalt in being part of Krishna's lila. In which case we see all of our difficulties and adversities as pleasurable in Krishna's lila. So we can choose to see the scary things in our life as safe scary. Whoa, what's Krishna going to do now? So they were almost unconscious from fear, which is what makes it fun. And then they open their eyes, and some of the acharyas say Krishna told them to open their eyes, and some say that some of the boys just opened their eyes on their own initiative. And maybe some boys were told and some boys opened on their own initiative, which is another interesting discussion, because sometimes we think, okay, being Krishna conscious means I just wait to be told and then I just do what I'm told. Okay, what do I do now? I have no personal desire and no personal initiative. I just wait to do what I'm told. Actually, Prabhupada says that we do a personal initiative, says in the Isha Upanishad. They have a personal initiative, and we're meant to dovetail that initiative, to have it in harmony with the will of the Lord. So some of the boys on their own said, wow, I don't feel hot anymore. It must be time to open my eyes. And when they opened their eyes, they thought, wow, I wonder if Krishna is a demigod. How did he do that? Because when they opened their eyes, it wasn't just that the fire was gone. I mean, that would have been pretty amazing, just that the fire was gone. They were back in Vadirgan. How far are they gone?
7 miles.
All of a sudden, they were back at Vadirgan. And Vadirgan is very close to Jamuna. And you know, they were all very thirsty. Remember, they were thirsty from the long walk. And then, you know, if you're surrounded by fire, you feel thirsty, right? You get really hot, you get thirsty. They're all really thirsty. Now they're back by the Jamuna that they could drink. And it was really interesting when they think that Krishna's a demigod, they don't all of a sudden think, oh my God, oh no, I gotta worship him. How could I, like Arjuna did. Arjuna thought, oh, how did I speak casually to Krishna? We were sitting on the same bed and eating together, and I joked with him. You joke with people, you even insult them, right? Oh, I shouldn't have done that. Coward boys didn't think like that. They just thought, wow, Krishna's a demigod, well, maybe we're demigods too. Wow, that would be fun. That's how they were thinking.
It also looks like there's nothing burnt in the area, so that would be another miracle, right?
Yeah, well, they're very far. They're 7 miles from where the fire was.
Okay, got it. Okay.
They just jumped back.
Okay.
So they had gone 7 miles away. The cows, goats, and buffalo, thank you, had gone 7 miles away, and the coward boys walked 7 miles to find them, at which point they were very thirsty. Then they're surrounded by them. They just started walking back.
Okay, I got it.
And the fire was already there, then surrounded them. Krishna told them to close their eyes, swallow the fire. When they opened their eyes, boom, they were back where they started. So they're far away from the area of the fire. Whether that was healed or not is not mentioned. Good point. I don't know. All right, then they come back. This is a picture from one of our other books. Then they come back to Vrindavan, and it's described that the gopis then, some of you may remember that children's song. It is the evening, Krishna and Balaram, along with the boys and calves, are returning to Vrindavan playing their flutes. So this is at the end of this pastime, it's described that the gopis are waiting for Krishna and the cowherd boys to come back. And they're feeling that every moment that Krishna's in the forest is like 12 years. And this is from another one of our books. So then the cowherd boys all run to Yasoda Nandamara and say, guess what, guess what, guess what happened today? What happened today? Two things. What are the two things we're going to talk about? Palambasura and the fire. Palambasura and the fire. And all the residents of Vrindavan greatly increased in affection, hearing about Krishna and Balaram's activities. And then the summer season is over, and the rainy season starts. Okay, for our next one, I'm afraid I don't have any PowerPoint. If you could turn on the lights, sorry. I would have done one yesterday if I could have had electricity, but it didn't.
Is that a book?
The one I just showed you, we have a book called Safe from the Fire. It's one of our children's books, and there's also a little thing there from another one of the children's books, I Look for My Krishna, and then another one there from Yasoda's Vision. And then I had a couple things there that weren't from our books.
Who does the illustrations?
Those illustrations are done by a couple of disciples of Tamal Krishna Maharaj, who are professional animators in China. But they've done about half the books, and I have a bunch of other illustrators for other books. And I can show you some of the other books if we have time at the end, but I don't. So now we're going to leave Vrindavan and go to Dwarka. And again, our idea with this is that as we go through our lives, we should be seeing how things in our lives remind us of Krishna's Leela. And also be thinking about my own life is part of Krishna's adventure. I will tell you all, my dear friends, that as soon as you start thinking of your own life as part of Krishna's adventure, your whole life will change. Whole life will change. Every moment of your life will become thrilling and exciting. And it doesn't matter if the things that happen in your life are just awful. It doesn't matter. Oh, okay, it's part of Krishna's adventure. Just like in any, you know, materialistic adventure, people who, again, they're going to movies, reading books, and playing computer games and things like that, looking for Krishna's adventure. You think of adventure stories. Does the hero sometimes get into trouble?
All the time.
Could you think of, would anybody watch a movie where there's the bad guy and the good guy and the good guy just kills the bad guy in the first scene and then it's all over? Who would be interested in a story like that? There's some difficulty, there's some obstacle. Sometimes the bad guy catches the good guy. Right? Sometimes you think the good guy's going to be finished, but you know the good guy's not going to be finished because, you know, he's Superman and they want to make a sequel. There's no way they're going to kill him off in the movie. So again, there's this feeling of safety. You know the good guy's going to win. You know, if you go see the Superman movie, you know Superman's going to win. You know the bad guy's going to get it. You just don't know how. And it's exciting. Isn't it exciting? I mean, I remember when I was a kid, it was exciting. How's he going to do it? Oh, this happened. How's this happened? And if you're in the story, you don't know how it's going to turn out exactly. You know the hero's going to win, but you don't know how. You don't know how. And does the hero also often save everything at the last minute? You notice with the fire story, the fire was at a distance. Why did Krishna just take away the fire at a distance? Why did he wait till it surrounded them in all eight directions, shooting flames like meteors? It's much more exciting.
Intensified
experience. Intensive, exactly.
And why should he swallow it?
What?
Why should he swallow it? He could just make it disappear.
He could have just made it disappear, yeah. It's more fun to swallow it. You find Krishna sometimes does that. With some demons, it's just like, okay, just kill him. And sometimes it's a whole, it depends on what mood he's in, who the demon is, I suppose. All right, so now we're in Dwarka, and Krishna has gone with all of his queens and most of the residents of Dwarka to Indraprastha for the Rajasuya sacrifice.
I have until, what, 12, right?
For the Rajasuya sacrifice. Now, it's unclear whether Balaram never went with him, whether Balaram always stayed back in Dwarka to guard Dwarka, whether Balaram went with Krishna but came back before Krishna, or whether Balaram came back with Krishna in the story. That's unclear. We're not sure, and different acharyas have different opinions. It seems like either Balaram never went, or Balaram came back early. That's what it seems like. We're not absolutely sure about this. Sanatan says this pastime takes place after the Pandavas have been exiled. So you know that after the Rajasuya Yagya, that people were milling around for a while. And if you think about the Rajasuya Yagya, Krishna and his queens getting there was a pretty big thing. You know, if you've got 16,108 wives, I mean, just think what it's like traveling with just, you know, one wife and two kids someplace and all the luggage. And, you know, if you had 16,000 wives and each of them has 10 kids, and then you know, there's no washing machines. You got to bring people to do the laundry, and then you got to bring teachers along because you're going to be gone for a while. You got to bring all your servants, and then there's all the other members of the family. So it was a big retinue, and there weren't all paved roads and bridges. So they had to have also people creating these things as they went. They were camping. It was a long, many months trip, which is probably another story about how the kings of Jarasandha had to wait that long to be freed. Kings imprisoned by Jarasandha. They had to wait for Krishna to go to Indraprastha. They had to wait for the brothers to go all over India, and they had to wait so many things before Krishna freed them. It was a long trek to Indraprastha, and then they were there for over a year because the brothers went out for a year to all the kingdoms to get them to submit to Maharaj Yudhisthira. Then there was the Rajasuya Yagya, and then Maharaj Yudhisthira. Everybody was leaving then. You know, at the end of the party, everybody leaves, right? But Maharaj Yudhisthira said to Krishna, please stay. Please stay a little longer. And he agreed to stay, and he stayed, I believe, for some months longer. So it could be at that point that Balaramji went back, but Krishna and his queen still stayed in Indraprastha. So it could also be, you know, it was not that long after that, which is also another interesting story, how Maharaj Yudhisthira became the emperor of the world. He had opulence equal to that of Brahma. His opulence was, it said that none of his desires remained unfulfilled. Prabhupada says, materially, nobody can say, I fulfilled all of my desires perfectly, but Maharaj Yudhisthira could say that. And soon after that, he lost him. And he's happy in those circumstances. And he's a devotee in those circumstances, and he loves Krishna in those circumstances. Krishna gives him everything, everything's taken away. So it could be that this also happened, according to Sanatana Goswami, after the gambling match, that this pastime takes place, or it could have happened before, while Krishna was still there with Maharaj Yudhisthira. Right, now this is described in Sanskrit in the Bhagavatam as Krida Nara Sarirasya, that Krishna has a human-like form. Krida means play, Nara, human-like. Sarira is a form. That Krishna has a human-like form for the sake of his krita, or his play. Now, we remember way back when Krishna kidnapped Rukmini. And somehow this kidnapping of Rukmini really got a lot of people upset. It even initially got Rukmini's father, King Vishvamaka, upset. That's another interesting story. Because he wanted Krishna to marry Rukmini. He wanted Krishna to marry Rukmini, but then he got into Krishna marrying Shishupal. And he planned for the wedding to be in Vidarbha, spent all the money, invited all the guests, decorated the city. That was going to be the wedding day. Okay, here is my daughter's wedding day. And Krishna kidnaps her and she gets married him in Dwarka. So he wasn't going to go to the wedding, and Balaram had to convince him to go. But anyway, so a lot of people got upset about Krishna kidnapping Rukmini. Of course, the main person who was upset was Shishupal. Shishupal and Rukmini were both very upset, and all of their friends were also really upset. I mean, you know, you might be upset if your friend was going to marry somebody and some other guy comes and kidnaps her on the morning of the wedding. So they were all really upset, and they wanted, as typical for materialistic persons, if somebody makes you upset and you're a materialistic person, what do you want? I want that person to suffer probably at least 20 times more than I suffered. At least. So Shalva was a friend of Shishupal. And he was very angry that Krishna had kidnapped Shishupala's intended bride. And now he was doubly angry because what happened at the Rajasiya sacrifice? Krishna now killed Shishupala. And later in the story, Shava says, well, my friend was a little inattentive, you killed him. Which is kind of interesting. So Shava's really angry at Krishna, and he says, I want to kill this guy. And not only do I want to kill this guy, I want to kill his whole family. So Shava's a very interesting character here. There was a woman who was very much in love with Shava and wanted to marry him. Does anyone know who that was? She didn't get a chance to marry him, but she wanted to. Yes?
Amba.
Amba was the sister of King Vijayatirtha's wives. And Bhishma kidnapped all three girls to marry his brother. But Amba was already in love with Shishupala. And when she was brought to marry Vijayatirtha, she said, I can't marry Vijayatirtha. I've already given my heart to Shalva. And they said, okay, you can go marry Shalva. They took her to Shalva, and Shalva said, hey, you know, Bhishma took you. You're his now. I don't want anything to do with you. He wasn't a very nice guy, was he? Now, he and Amba, though, would have made a really good match. They were definitely compatible. Because Amba's mood after Shalva rejected her was, I want vengeance. And she wanted vengeance so much that she did austerities for several lifetimes. Now, you just think, she's in the personal presence of Krishna. She's on the planet, and Krishna's on the planet. She has association with Bhishma, one of the Mahajanas. Great devotees. And instead of taking advantage of it, all she thinks is, I want to get Bhishma. It's lifetimes. All she's doing is this anger, and I'm going to get him. Finally, she got her wish, as Shikhandi. Can we fall into that kind of thing? This devotee did this to me, I'm going to get them. What a waste of human energy. So Shalva had the same mentality. And nothing was even done to him. At least with Amba, was done to her. Shalva wasn't done to him. It was done to his friend. And he put all of his energy. My dear friends, we only have so much energy. I went to a really good seminar on how to manage your time, years ago, which just helped me so much. And it was done for business persons. And they said, the beginning of the day, you start out with a certain amount of energy. Think of it like a pie, and you can give so much energy to this, and you allocate your energy. So we only have so much Shakti in this life. You can think of it like money you have in the bank account. There's only so much of it. And think about, what am I giving my energy to? Where am I allocating my energy? So Shalva and Amba both allocated their energy to try to do harm to others. That was their home. How can I hurt somebody? Of course, if you have that mentality, then eventually it comes back to you. And he decided that the way he was going to do this was getting the favor of Lord Shiva. And he made up his own austerity. What was his austerity? Anybody know what his austerity was? Yes?
He ate a handful of dust every day and nothing else.
Yeah. Can you imagine? I mean, you know, we find it hard to fast for a day or something. I've talked to devotees who tell me they really have a hard time just eating Ekadasi prasadam on Ekadasi. You know, if you've ever done that that fast at the end of Chaturmasya, where you just eat fruits and roots for 5 days, after about day three, you're like, give me food. So he's eating a handful of dirt. That's all he's eating, one handful of dirt. And you'd have to have some mystic power to do that because most of us, if all we ate is dirt, we'd get really sick. And he did that every day for a year. So Lord Shiva didn't show up right away because he thought, this is just completely useless. There's no way I can fulfill this guy's desire to kill Krishna and the Yadus. It's not going to work. Waste of time. Why bother showing up? But after a while, he says, well, if I don't show up, then nobody will have faith in the process of sacrifice and penance. So I'll come. And he was good at giving a benediction that he knew would be useless. So after a year he comes, what do you want? And Shalva is really interesting. He doesn't say, I want Krishna to die. Or I want all the Yadus to die. Or, you know, let there be a big earthquake and just swallow Dwarka. He doesn't say that. He says, I want an airship that's going to be very dangerous for the others. He was very proud. He thought, if I have that, I can take care of everything. I don't need the ultimate benediction. All I need is some sort of a vehicle. Sariputta Prabhu, in his book, Alien Identities, takes quite a bit of time looking at childless airship and comparing it to modern accounts people have of meeting different, you know, spaceships and alien beings and things like that. And it's very interesting that the descriptions of childless airship very much coincide with people's descriptions of when they meet vehicles from outer space. All right, so he said, I want an airplane that cannot be destroyed by demigods, demons, humans, Gandharvas, Urugas, I don't know who Urugas are, or Rakshasas, that could go anywhere, that would terrify the Vishnis. So then Maya Dhanava made one on the order of Lord Shiva. And the airship was called an abode of darkness, which meant literally it was dark and also was full of ignorance. And of course he immediately went to Dwarka. Now when he went to Dwarka, who was not there? Where's Krishna? He's an Indraprastha. Now it's interesting, it says that his attack was like the attack of the three aerial cities of the demons on the earth many, many yugas previously. And in reading this, I thought it was interesting that there's so many science fiction books and movies that are made about alien beings attacking the earth. Obviously, it's in some of our collective memory that the earth has been attacked by huge vehicles of demons from other realms. And this is what happened with Shalva 5,000 years ago and many, 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 many millions of years ago before that. Now again, thinking about this in relationship to our lives. So let's pretend we're a resident of Dwarka. We're living in Dwarka. We're Krishna's devotees. Of course, Krishna's queens aren't there. Some people aren't there. A lot of people are there. And say, if I'm a devotee, everything's just going to be beautiful. Everything's just going to be safe. Well, he not only attacked from the sky, he also attacked with infantry. And it says he besieged the city with a large army. He destroyed all the parks and all the gardens. He destroyed all the mansions, all of their aerial observatories. He destroyed all the gateways, all the surrounding walls. He destroyed all the public recreational areas. It was massive civilian warfare. Everything was finished, and Krishna wasn't there. Does it ever seem like that in your life? Everything's finished, and where's Krishna? He's out of town. Krishna! He's not answering. Right? From his airship, he threw a torrent of weapons, stones, tree trunks, lightning bolts, snakes, hailstones. This is what it means to be part of Krishna's adventure. If you hear these things, you go, well, I don't know if I want to do that. And the only other option is to, you know, hang out with Paramatma or merge into the Brahman. And sometimes I think that part of our hesitancy to surrender is we're kind of afraid of an adventure. No, just let me have Om Shanti Shanti. But it's hard to have Om Shanti Shanti. Then you go to the movies and watch Superman adventure. Because we really want adventure. And there was a whirlwind, everything was covered with dust. So, as we said, some people were left back in Dwarka. One of them was Prajumna, the son of Krishna. Prajumna is a very interesting person. Prajumna, the son of Krishna, is who? Cupid. He's commanding. He's Cupid, the demigod Cupid, invested with the potency of the Vishnu Tattva, Prajumna. And it's very interesting that Cupid looks so much like Krishna that even his stepmothers couldn't tell the difference. And at first they thought, that's Krishna. Only Rukmini, his real mother, said, no, that's not Krishna. But even his other stepmothers thought he was Krishna. It's so easy to think that Cupid is Krishna, isn't it? That if I go for romance in this world, I'm going to be Krishna. Yes?
In spite of the age difference between father and child, you kind of stupid.
Because Krishna never gets old. Krishna never gets old. Krishna never looks older than 16 or 20. He doesn't age. Some small differences. There was no Shrivatsa and Kastubamani, small differences. But the other stepmothers, when they saw him, they actually felt attracted to him. They thought, oh, it's Krishna. Right? So he looks very much like Krishna. So you know, Cupid looks very much like Krishna. Can fool us. We think, oh, that's Krishna. We'll look closely and go, oh, no, it's not Krishna. Okay, but Prajuna is a pure devotee of Krishna. He's almost as powerful as Krishna. So he went with his brothers and he goes to Balaram, which means Balaram must be there. And he says, Balaram, you guard the city and we'll go out and attack Shalva. And this battle was like the battle between the demigods and the demons in the heavenly planets. And Shalva created many illusions. And as soon as Prajumna entered the battlefield, he was like the sun. That all of a sudden, all the illusions went away. So we also find this. There's catastrophes in our life. Our whole life is decimated. Krishna seems far away. And as soon as we even just contact the devotee of Krishna, they're like the sun. And all of our problems may not have gone away. The problems didn't go away yet. But the illusions were all dispelled. People could see the reality. Then Lord Prajumna took out his arrows, which had gold sheaths and iron heads and perfectly smooth joints. And he attacked Shalva's commander-in-chief, Juman, with, I'm going to ask you about this, 25 arrows. With 100 arrows, he attacked Shalva. Now, Shalva must have been pretty powerful that he was hit with 100 arrows, and he still lived. Then he pierced Shalva's officers with one arrow each, chariot drivers with 10 arrows each, and horses and other carriers with 3 arrows each. Can any of you remember any of those? Shalva got how many arrows? Juman got? Officers got? And the horses and other carriers? Chariot drivers? 10. Now he did that all at once, just like... Yes, just like that. And the soldiers on both sides were going, Jai Prajumna! So that's the mood in fighting, that you even praise your enemy when they do a good job. There's kind of a sportsmanship mood among the soldiers. Now, they couldn't trace the location of Shalva's airship. It would just move instantly from earth to mountain to water. You know, you see there, and then it was over there. You wouldn't see it traveling. And sometimes it looked like many spaceships. Sometimes it looked like one spaceship. Now, Shalva was being really harassed. The Yadus, because they couldn't see where the spaceship was, they were just shooting in every direction simultaneously. And the arrows came out from the members of the Yadus, just like the sun rays come out from one central location, but go out at all different points. And the Yadu's arrows had a lethal effect like snake venom. So as soon as someone got hit with the arrow, they were finished. And they burned the soldiers of Shalva like fire. But the Yadus were also harassed. So sometimes in our service, doing things for Krishna, we may experience some victory, but we may also be experiencing some difficulty. And the Yadus were also severely harassed by Shalva and his soldiers, but they stuck to their posts. They said, if we die, we enjoy the earth. And if we die, we go to heaven. If we live, we enjoy the earth. What does it matter? So this is the mood of the devotee. I'm in Krishna's adventure. Krishna may be out of town in Indraprastha. I may be attacked by my enemies. My city's decimated. I'm fighting my best. Whatever happens, I stick to my post. Stick to my post. When I first joined ISKCON, one of the devotees said to me, Srilekha, she said, whatever happens, you stay in the boat. She said, there's going to be storms, you'll get seasick, but stay in the boat. Somehow or other, I followed her advice by her mercy. So that was the view of the Yadu soldiers. Stay at your post. You don't leave. You don't run away. Like the demons, when Vritrasura was being attacked by Indra, they started running away. And Vritrasura had to say, hey, come on back, you cowards. One of the demarcations between the demons and the demigods is courage. That's a whole other class. But anyway, the Yadus had great courage. They stuck to their post. Then Juman, you remember Juman, Prajumna had hit him with? 25 arrows. He was a little mad. I mean, you'd be mad if you were here 25 arrows. So he took out a black iron club. That was a pretty strong guy. And he went, and hit Prajumna in the chest with enough force that any ordinary person's chest would have been torn in two. And then Prajumna appeared to go unconscious, and everyone thought he was dead. Now this is interesting because Prabhupada says that Prajumna has a spiritual body. He's not an ordinary person, doesn't have a body that can die or get injured. But this is again part of the story, it's part of the adventure. Right? You know Superman can't get injured, you know he's not going to die, but when he gets tied up by the bad guy, it's exciting. So that's the excitement. Oh no, Prajumna's dead. And then Prajumna's chariot driver is Daruka's son. So in Yoga Maya, he thinks, oh, my master's dying. Save him. Right? So he takes him off the battlefield. And Prabhupada says 2 hours. If you look at the Sanskrit, it says a moment. So I don't know how long it was. A moment, it felt like 2 hours. 2 hours, it felt like a moment. Or I don't know. But Prajumna came back to consciousness. Hey, where am I? I'm off the battlefield. You, eunuch. And all my sisters-in-law will make fun of me. How will I talk to my father, Krishna, and my uncle, Balaram? And we should feel like that. One devotee did this yesterday, who had given up practicing Krishna consciousness and now come back, he was saying that, how do I go before Prabhupada and tell him that I left the battlefield? And so we should feel like that. You should feel like, I want to be able to come in front of my spiritual master, to come in front of Krishna and say, I stuck to my post. The lightning bolts were coming, the tree trunks were falling, the stones were falling, there was dust everywhere, the city was decimated, you were out of town, and there was no email connection. and I stuck to my post. There was no mobile phones. Yeah, and I stuck to my post. Even up to death. Some people, as part of Krishna's adventures, they do die, like Abhimanyu. That was his part in Krishna's adventure. His part in Krishna's adventure was to break into the circle formation and get killed. To show how devious the Kurus were. That was his role. It was Bhishma's role to fight on the wrong side, to show that even if you're a great warrior, if you fight on the wrong side, it's not going to work. Krishna says, I want you to fight with the demons. Yes, sir. I remember we used to do dramas with the little kids in the nursery. Jayashree would remember. Her kids were in my nursery school. And so one time we did the kidnapping of Rukmini, and you'd ask the kids, who wants to be Krishna? Who wants to be Shishupal? Who wants to be... So I said, who wants to be Rukmini? And somebody got Rukmini. And my daughter told me years later that she really wanted to be Rukmini that day. And when I said, then who wants to be Rukmini? She thought, oh, I guess I didn't hear properly. There is still a chance to be Rukmini. Oh, okay. All right, you're a Rukmini. Rukmini, I want to be Rukmini. I remember when we used to do the Ramayana in New York. And the devotee Jamabati, who was playing Sita, got pregnant. And I was asked if I could be Sita in the play. I said, no, my husband isn't so much into me doing theater. So then they found another Sita. They found Jamabati to be Sita. And then my husband came to me a week later and said, oh, go be in the play. So I went and said, okay, I can be Sita. They said, sorry, that point's taken now. You can be Shurpanaka. Sita. So imagine Krishna comes to you and say, okay, you've got to fight for the Kurus. What service do I do for you in this life, Lord? You fight with the demons, okay? You get killed by the devotees. You get to be one of the bad guys. The devotees are willing to do anything. You know, fight on the side of the bad guys. Look like a fool by gambling away your wife. Just so people will say, hey, even Yudhisthira couldn't control himself when he gambled. Who do you think you are? That was his service. So, Prajumna's like, wait a minute, I gotta stick to my service. If my service is to die on the battlefield, so be it. But I don't leave my service. And then his driver said, listen, you went unconscious. You know, I was just doing my duty, I was doing my responsibility. There's no fault on my part. And then Prajumna said, okay. That's also very interesting, instructive part of the pastime. Because sometimes we think that if we're doing the right thing, that all the other devotees should always appreciate it. They don't always. So Jaruka's son did the right thing, and Prajumna just yelled at him. I mean, sometimes we think like that. Well, I'm doing the right thing. I'm doing my duty. Why don't all the devotees just say, Jai, Krishna Das? But they don't always. Now, what'd you do this foolish thing for? And that's what Prajumna did. He said, you're ruining my whole life. As an interesting story like that was Gadadhar Pandit. Balabhacharya had wanted Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to hear his Bhagavatam commentaries. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't want to hear them because Balabhacharya had criticized Sridhar Swami. And so Swami Damodar said, no, sorry, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not going to hear your commentaries. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has made some pretty cutting statements about Balabha's mentality. We see this with Back to Godhead. People submit articles, and if we tell them they're not perfect, they get offended. A few people will say, okay, I'll fix it till it's perfect. But a lot of people just get offended. I'm never going to submit anything to BGG anymore. I hear that a lot. So that was kind of Balava's mentality. Oh, it's not perfect. Instead of let me fix it and make it good, he was just, what does he mean it's not perfect? It's great. I wrote it. So he was going around to all the devotees trying to get them to read it, and then none of them would do it. And then he just barged into Gadadhar Pandit's house, sat down, and started reading. And Gadadhar Pandit was very mellow. And he didn't feel he could protest. And it was his own house. You know, he didn't really feel he could throw him out of the house. He didn't feel he could leave. And he just sat there and he thought, well, Lord Chaitanya will know my heart, even though the other devotees will criticize me. And that's exactly what happened. The other devotees criticized him, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knew his motives. So sometimes we have to have that faith. That even if everybody criticizes, maybe Krishna knows my heart. Of course, sometimes when people criticize us, we should also listen. Learn both lessons from that. So Prajumna gets up, and he's now convinced that his driver was okay. He does Akshma, puts on his armor, and goes back to fight. Now this time, he's not going to fool around with Juman anymore. So we find this with Krishna and the devotees. They sometimes like to just play with the demons and have fun, and after a while, it's like, okay, let's get this over with. So he goes to Juman, and Juman is now completely devastating the Yadu army. So now not only Krishna's not there, but Prajumna's not there. You're one of the Yadu soldiers, or you're in the city kind of watching out through one of the little holes in the stones, you know. Krishna's in Indraprastha, and now it looked like Prajumna was killed. Now what are you going to do? So they're there, and they're being devastated by Juman. And Prajumna comes and says, all right, see if you can hit me now. And he just stands there and allows Juman to shoot all of his weapons at him. Of course, doesn't get hurt. Then he fires 8 arrows, 4 at the horses, 1 at each horse, 1 at the driver, 1 at the boat, 1 at the flag, 1 at his head, which is now makes him dead. Got that? 4 at the horses, 1 at the driver, 1 at the boat, 1 at the flag, 1 at the head, which makes him dead. Anybody remember any of those? What did you shoot? Horses? One drug? One flag? One the bow? And what it is? Head. All right, Juman's now out. Just knocked the queen off the board. Right? Now, the other Yadus become very enlightened when Prajumna comes back and they start shooting the soldiers who are in Shalva's airplane. And they fall down into the sea. They fall off of the airplane. You can see them. This whole thing has gone on for a couple hours, right? Since Shalva attacked. How long has it all gone on for? Anybody know? 27 days. 27 days. Sometimes it seems like that, right? That there's all these catastrophes in our life and they're going on and on and on. And where's Krishna? And where's Krishna? Again, how do we see it? That Krishna's deserted me, he doesn't love me, or that I'm part of Krishna's adventure. Okay, meanwhile, in Indraprastha, Krishna sees bad omens. He takes permission, especially from Kunti, And he says, while Balaram and I have been here, Shishupal's friends have attacked Dwarka. So the commentators say that this must not be Sukadeva Goswami's opinion, because Balaram isn't there. And that how could Krishna be concerned about bad omens? So that must not actually be Sukadeva Goswami's opinion. It must be the opinion of others. So here we have one of those Acharya conflict sections. Then Krishna comes back to Dwarka. Now, again, that takes a little while to come back to Dwarka. So he comes back to Dwarka with all of his queens, tells Balaramji to be in charge of the city, but we assume Balaramji was already in charge of the city. Then he gets his queens and all their children and their washer ladies and stuff into the city by a secret underground route. So can you picture the scene? There's a war going on, right? There's a war. Shalva's attacking from the sky. Soldiers are attacking on the ground. And Krishna's sending, and how are we going to get into the city? Right? So there you are with Krishna's queens. If you're lucky, you're one of the queens. Maybe you're one of the washer ladies. Okay? And you're sneaking into Dwarka through the underground route while Dwarka is still being attacked. All right, then Krishna asks his driver, Dwarka, to go to Shalva and says, hey, Shalva's just a magician. Don't fear. This is a repeating theme. Don't fear. Like Krishna, we saw in the Vrindavan Leela, where Krishna told the boys, don't fear. Don't fear. He says to Arjuna, don't fear. Krishna doesn't say, I'm just going to make everything go away just like this. But he says, don't fear. In other words, it's happy excitement. It's safe excitement. It's an adventure. It's an excitement, but it's safe. One's always going to be safe. You know that Krishna is going to win. Now Krishna comes onto the battlefield and everybody sees. What are they seeing? What particular? What do they see? Have you been without Krishna now for 27 days fighting these soldiers? Hasn't looked very good. Sometimes looked good, sometimes looked bad. One time you thought your commander was killed. And now you look, you know, battlefield's very dusty. A lot of commotion. You see a flag. What flag do you see? Garuda, the flag with Garuda on it. Ah, Krishna's finally come. Has that ever happened in our life? This catastrophe, that catastrophe. Oh, Krishna's finally come. Ah, here he is. All right, now it's not that Krishna comes and then immediately, boom, everything's solved also. This is another recurring theme. Kamsa hears the voice in the sky, the eighth son of David, he's going to kill you. So we think as soon as he appears, he's going to kill Kamsa. He could do it, right? He killed Putin, by the way. What was the problem? He could have appeared in the prison, just, you know, okay, here I am, bring him on. Kamsa comes to prison, kill him. But he didn't. He left. Take me to Vrindavan. And depending on how you interpret it, 16 or 11 years later, he came back. Plus, you think of all the years all the other children were born, at least 7 years. Talking at least 20 years between the time Kamsa hears the voice and the time Krishna kills him. It's not like Krishna shows up and boom, now everything's taken care of. Like we're talking about with the kings who were imprisoned by Jarasandha. They sent the representative and Krishna says, go tell them I'll save them. Then he has to bring his whole retinue to Indraprastha. Then the brothers go all over the world. Then Krishna goes to Bhima to fight with Arjuna. We're talking at least 18 months. So sometimes Krishna also does that with that. Don't fear, everything will be okay. But still the adventure's unfolding. Still the story's unfolding. And what did Bhaktivinoda Thakur say? It's our choice. Do I choose to exult in being part of Krishna's adventure? Or do I choose to take hold of Maya and suffer? Remember, none of these people are actually suffering. They're seeing it as exciting. All right, well, the others have done a pretty good job, so now Shalva is the master of an army that's reduced to nothing. The master of an army that's reduced to nothing. Doesn't that describe so many of us in the material world? The master of nothing. The master of illusions. Like we see kids playing video games. What are you mastering? Ones and zeros. How are you mastering? Nothing. So in this world, I want to be the master of nothing. Bunch of protons, neutrons, and electrons that have temporarily formed themselves into building and money and cars and things like that. And the whole universe is lasting for one breath of Lord Vishnu, which means my lifetime isn't even promised a spot life, as Burjan who says, why do you care about being a millionaire for 8 billionths of a second? So that's the mentality of the demons. I may be a master of nothing, but I'm still the master of nothing, maybe, but I'm the master. So he doesn't surrender. He hasn't surrendered. Sometimes we think if Krishna showed up, you know, and it was really obvious, and I'd say, but it's not like that. He can show up, and he's right in front of you, and everything's finished, and you can see I'm the master of nothing, and you still say, I'm going to fight. That's what he did. So then Krishna attacked, and the ship looked just like the sky. It was the same color of the sky, and the way it was moving, you couldn't distinguish it from the sky. Then Krishna shot 16 arrows effortlessly, just like the rays coming out of the sun, in all directions, because the ship's moving everywhere. And they all hit Shalva. Then Shalva attacks. Now, Jiva Goswami and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that this next section is not Sukadeva Goswami's opinion. They really don't like any time when Krishna is shown as being even temporarily defeated. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur and Jiva Goswami. Whenever that happens, they say, no, this didn't really happen. That's just somebody's opinion. Krishna can't be defeated even for a second. That's their mood. And Prabhupada just says the acharyas have different opinions on this. So Shalva hits Krishna's left arm and the Sharinga bow falls. A similar thing happens when Hiranyaksha hits Lord Varaha and Varaha's mace falls. Spins down. So Krishna's finally showed up. Here you are on the battlefield fighting 27 days. Arjuna was almost killed, city's decimated, Krishna finally shows up. First thing that happens is drops his bow. Second thing happens, drops his bow. Then Shalva becomes encouraged. That's what happens when these things happen. The demons always become encouraged. Oh, I'm going to win. You took Shishupal's bride. And when he was a little attentive at the Rajasuya, you killed him. He wasn't a little inattentive. He was blaspheming Krishna. He wasn't inattentive at all. Prabhupada talks about Vijaya Sundar criticizing Krishna for killing Kamsa. He says the demons, they overlook their own faults as insignificant and they really see the faults of others. So Vijaya Sundar doesn't say, oh, Kamsa killed, you know, 6 of his nephews. He just says, oh, Krishna, you killed your maternal uncle. So that's like Shalva also. You know, he's just criticizing Krishna, not Shishupala. And Krishna says, real heroes act, they don't talk. Why don't you do something? He said, I see death standing right next to you, by the way. Let's see what you can do. So then Krishna attacks. He throws his club with terrible speed and power, and Shalva vomits blood and starts trembling. Now again, Jiva Goswami Vishnu Thakur says, this section is not Sukadeva Goswami's opinion. So Shalva then disappears. We see the demons are cowards. All materialistic people are ultimately cowards, which is a whole other class, which we don't have time to do. So we'll just throw that out there. Anyone who's materialist is ultimately a coward. When things get rough, they give up all their religious principles. That's why we say that if you're not pure, you don't have any good qualities. You'll have a quality up to a point, and when things get really rough, you throw away your good quality. So Shalva's a big fighter, and he's so tough, and I'm going to kill you, Krishna, and blah, blah, blah. And then as soon as he is in some danger, he just disappears and resorts to magic. He starts playing unfair. He starts cheating. So some unknown man comes and shows Krishna, here's your father. Shows him a man who looks like Vasudeva. And Krishna starts crying. And he says, how could Vasudeva have been kidnapped? Balaram was in charge of the city. How can anybody surpass Balaram? His fate is all powerful. Then Shalva comes down. He said, here's the father who begot you and by whose grace you're still living. Let me now kill him in front of you. Indrajit did this with a false Sita. Also to destroy the morale of Ram and the army. And he apparently cut off Vasudeva's head. Okay. And then Shalva disappears, the man disappears, everything just kind of disappears, and Krishna's lamenting. And then it's like he kind of wakes up from a dream and goes, where's the man? Where's Vasudeva? What's going on? Obviously it's just magic. So again, think if you're there, you're one of the devotees there. You're saying Krishna's got his, he's dropped his bow. Now he's crying about his father being killed. Of course, Prabhupada explains, the acharyas explain, that there's no question of Krishna ever actually becoming bewildered. How do we know that? Because the devotees who meditate on Krishna are never bewildered. So if Krishna's devotees are never bewildered, how can Krishna be bewildered? They say that this is just simply a display of Krishna's lila. And other examples are when Brahma sold the boys and calves and Krishna's looking around, where do they go? Right? He looked extensively for them before he manifested as the boys and calves. Another example is when the boys went into Agasura's mouth. You know, Krishna didn't want them to go in, but they wanted Krishna to show some heroism. And the desires of the devotees trump the desires of Krishna, so they went into Agasura's mouth, and then Krishna had to figure out how to save them. Which is fun. It's fun figuring out how to do things, isn't it? Feel like a mental challenge. Krishna likes figuring out how to be a hero. But those are other examples where Krishna appeared to be bewildered. But actually, he's never bewildered. He does it for fun. But Shabha felt very encouraged by Krishna's bewilderment. Wow, I'm going to win. And he started shooting torrents of weapons. But just like Prajumna, Krishna was also completely unaffected. Then Krishna takes his club, throws it at the airplane, smashes it to pieces, and the airplane in little bits and pieces falls into the sea. And Shabha cleverly jumps off the airplane onto the land without a parachute, presumably. And he wasn't affected by the devastation of his airship. And then he rushes toward Krishna with a club. Krishna uses a dart, cuts off his club arm, uses his chakra, cuts off his head. That's the end of him. Krishna is always victorious. Then he re-enters Dwarka and he looks like the sun on top of a mountain as he re-enters Dwarka. We know that after this, other friends of Shabha talk, like Dantavakra. The acharyas say that Dantavakra didn't attack in Dwarka, that he attacked in Mathura. That he was attacking Mathura, and when Krishna heard that Dantavakra was attacking in Mathura, he went from Dwarka to Mathura, killed Dantavakra and Vidaratha. Then at that point, Krishna renounced any more fighting, which is why he didn't take up any weapons at Kurukshetra. And because he was already in Mathura, he went to Vrindavan. And in Vrindavan, then he took all the residents to the spiritual world. And then he went back to Dwarka to complete his pastimes. At this point, also, Balaramaji leaves aside his weapons and decides to go on pilgrimage. So at this point, in the Lila, Krishna and Balaram both stop fighting with the demons. So we've made pretty good time. I hope that you enjoyed this little look into Krishna's Lila in terms of our entering into the Lila, seeing the things in our life and reminding us of Krishna's Lila, and feeling ourselves also as part of Krishna's story. Feeling ourselves also as part of Krishna's story, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur advises us in Jivadharma. That it's simply our choice, that everything happening in this material world is also the Lord's Lila. And it's our choice. Do I choose to think independently of Krishna and suffer, or do I choose to see that I'm participating in the Lord's Lila and exult in doing so? In which case, the Thakur says, all my apparent misery turns into pleasure. All my apparent misery turns into pleasure. We are not propounding a philosophy of being insipid. We're not propounding a philosophy that you become Krishna conscious and you're just like, everything's fine. I have no problems. That's not our philosophy. And how interesting would that be? It might be interesting for, you know, a few days. Especially if life's been really tough. And how interesting is that? We want variety, we want excitement, we want adventure. Right? We want there to be mystery. We want to be saved by some hero. So we can see our life like that, and then we experience, as Prabhupada said, a thrill at every moment. So we have 5 minutes, if anyone has, my watch has 2 minutes. If anyone has a question, yes.
Well, yesterday I was kind of little think about the Radhanath Maharaj class. His class was about that God sister who said, Krishna loves me, Krishna loves us.
Uh-huh.
And especially for the devotees yesterday, the weather was such a challenge. So if Krishna loves us, and not me, but the devotees, Why he sent that bad weather?
Why did Krishna send? Well, we have to of course ask Krishna directly why he sent the bad weather. I mean, I can't presume that I'm going to speak for him. I'm not his, you know, PR agent here. Why did he send the bad weather? But you can see that when Krishna sends the bad weather, it pushes us to cooperate with each other in ways that we wouldn't have before. It pushes us to choose novel solutions, and there's a lot of pleasure in that. There's a lot of pleasure. If you see it that way, that's Bhaktivinoda Thakura's point.
Hello, Santa. Hello, Santa. Hi, Krishna. Hi, Krishna. Hello, Santa.
Somebody can stop that.
Kalakanta just went out of the room. Depends how you see it. What has Krishna given us an opportunity to do? You know, when Indra poured torrents of rain, talk about bad weather. You want to talk about bad weather? That was really bad weather. And Krishna didn't just stop it. You know, Chaimana Muni, he just paralyzed Indra's arm in another lila. But Krishna didn't just paralyze Indra's arm. He didn't just stop it. He let there be bad weather. And what happened as a result of bad weather? Everybody got to be together. Generally, everybody's not together. Krishna's just with the parents, or just with the gopis, or just with the cowherd boys. When Krishna leaves the forest and goes, when Krishna goes in the forest, Mother Yasoda's crying. When Krishna comes back from the forest, the deer and the birds are crying. Somebody's always crying. Under Govardhan, nobody's crying. Everybody got to be together. And Krishna got to do something heroic and interesting. And he conquered bad weather by picking up a hill. Yeah, there's something creative and interesting that we can talk about and have a festival about. How much festival we have if he just said, hey, stop it, Indra. How festival would that be? That was really bad weather. I mean, that was really, really bad weather. The rain was coming down like arrows. It was piercing. Have you ever been in rain like that? It was piercing. And it was huge wind, and then people were cold. It wasn't just everybody was like, la-di-da. They were cold. Govinda, save us. You told us to worship him. Save us, please. You know? They were cold.
Actually.
But it was fun. They found the fun in it. How does Krishna get to save us? Yes.
It's very difficult to stay committed to one just like that. I'm a part of Krishna's need.
Practice. 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 Arjuna says, Chanchala Himana Krishna, the mind's very difficult. Krishna says, yes, certainly, but it can be conquered with suitable practice and detachment. He said it's very difficult to see life like that. You have to practice. Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, it's a question of making an intentional choice. It's a question of making an intentional choice. We're part of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. You can look at it two ways. You can look at Bhaktivinoda Thakura's way, the whole material world is Krishna's lila. You can look at it in terms of this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, we're part of the branch of the Chaitanya tree. We're enacting his pastimes.
So we have to make choices every second. We have to stay committed.
You don't have to, but you are.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hopefully you won't have to remind yourself every second after a while. Hopefully after a while you won't have to remind yourself at all. It'll just be natural. Because it is natural. We're practiced to do something unnatural. So to again become natural, we have to practice. You know, it's not natural to be a heroin addict. That's not natural. If you choose to be a heroin addict, then in order to become sober again, you have to practice. And it's hard. It's difficult to change your habit. It's very difficult. And you say, why is it so difficult? If not being an addict is natural, why can't I just decide I don't want to be an addict and then boom. Once we become addicted to a materialistic way of thinking, then we go through a treatment program and we have to work hard. It's an endeavor. And there's some work. Prabhupada says, until you're fixed, it's a hard struggle with determination. Once you're fixed, everything comes one after another, automatically, without that kind of struggle. There's still a choice, but it's not a struggle. You know, if you're madly in love with a girl, you're choosing to buy her flowers, but it's not a struggle. If you're angry with her, You may still choose, but I don't want to buy her flowers. So in the neophyte stage, it's like that. I don't want to think about Krishna. I don't want to think of part of Krishna's story. I just want to suffer. I want to blame people. And I just want to look for vengeance. And I want to be angry. And I want to be depressed. And I want to try to be the controller. And I don't want to be part of Krishna's story. You know? And then you go, okay, now I'm going to go. What was I supposed to do? How do I do this? What's the rules again? Paper. Same book. And I got to do this. And, you know, and you have to make some effort. It's a hard struggle with determination. Gradually it comes. But we have to. To practice. And if you practice intentionally, eventually it'll become just how you live it. I see the world because it is the world. Okay, we should stop now because there's other programs going on. I hope you enjoyed these. And I hope you enjoyed the illustrations from our children's book in the Vrindavan portion of the seminar. Thank you very much.
Thanks. How are you? Oh, thank you.